Hey guys, welcome to the Martial and Healing Arts channel. I'm Rafe Kelly, founder of Evolve Move Play. I'm extremely excited to be sponsoring this channel. Martial and Healing Arts have been key aspects of embodiment and self-cultivation for thousands of years. I have some of my best friends in the industry, Rory Miller, Matt Thornton, Edward Hines, presenting here, and I'm really excited to share what they have to say with you guys. You're gonna love it. So Evolve Move Play is an ecology of practices of movement, mindfulness, nature connection, and community. And within the movement, we have a big emphasis on moving in nature and being able to do parkour. We also like to lift weights and throw things around, but there's a huge aspect of martial arts, and I've been training martial arts since I was 6 years old. So it's really exciting to be able to sponsor this channel in particular. If you're interested in my work, check out my talks on the Main Stage and the Movement Anatomy channel. If you can't get to either of those live, you can check us out at Rafe Kelly on Instagram, get all your awesome embodiment giveaways. And for now, just enjoy this amazing channel. It's gonna be an awesome show.
I'm really honored to introduce our session's presenter, Matt Hill, who is he's got really a great martial story behind him. He's a fifth dan aikido sensei and student of the famous Saito sensei, Saito Morihiro sensei, and his son. Also a former parachute regiment captain and an instructor in Russian Sistema and a student of a world-known Vladimir Vasilyev, who will also be a presenter on this conference. So before we start, Matt, can you talk a little bit about your martial art career? How did it all become start, and how did you, the connection with the army, and how does it all integrate?
Oh, could spend an hour on this bit, really. Hi, everyone. My name is Matt, as Ranko said. Big, huge pleasure and honor to be here. And thanks for tuning in so early. And thanks also for making the change. I know that the session I had switched from Saturday to today. So for those that have made that jump, really appreciate you logging in and coming in. The journey, I've always been interested in martial arts, even before I knew what they were. So, you know, I, as a young boy, as a young child, I was always the kid that was running around the woods and pretending to be Robin Hood and trying to make a bow and arrow and a sword. And, you know, I just loved everything about that idea. And the older I got, the more I realized it wasn't just the physical, the fighting arts bit. I loved the philosophy and the idea of a warrior, what a warrior is, you know, the complete look at yourself, your ethics, your morals, your mindset, your character, and how to live a life like that. So that had always appealed to me. And then as I kind of went through life, I grew up in the 70s, so watching things like Bruce Lee and you know, those things, the awareness of martial arts started to become more mainstream, I think, in the 70s. And you know, I remember David Carradine in Kung Fu, and I was just transfixed by those things on TV. And then, you know, shortly after that, my hometown martial arts club started to spring up, and I thought, wow, they actually teach these things. So I went along and enrolled and was immediately hooked. The very first thing I did was karate. I did Wado Ryu karate. I did that for a couple of years. Got to, I think, a green belt. And then I found Aikido. I watched one of Steven Seagal's first films and thought, wow, like a lot of people.
What's that? Yeah, Steven Seagal, yeah.
Like, you know, what are these skirts and what are the, you know, the movements and the ideas and that the kind of the mystery of O-sensei. And so I was hooked into that. And then, lo and behold, I found that there was actually an Aikido club in my hometown. A teacher, Michael Neri sensei from Bristol, used to come across and teach on a Friday. So I joined that. And again, I was hooked. And that took me up to about 17, 18. And I was doing my A-levels at the time. And I had a place to go to university. But I'd taken a year out because myself and a friend did we hitchhiked across Canada for 3 months and in a gap year. And then I had about another 6 months or so where I could choose to do some. I had some time to fill before university started, so I thought, what a great opportunity it would be to go and study Aikido full time. And I cast around a little bit, and there weren't that many options. One fell through, and then Michael had another teacher who was Philippe Verino, who was coming across from France regularly to teach, and he had a full-time dojo in the south of France. So Michael said to him, would Matt be able to come across and train with you for a few months? And he said, okay, so let me watch him during training, and then I'll have a chat with him afterwards. It was a weekend seminar, largely weapons, Aikido weapons-based. And we did the seminar, and at the end of it, he said, look, you seem very sincere and serious, and I'd very happily take you at the dojo. But if you're really serious, and I think you are, I'll give you the introduction you need to go and see my teacher in Japan. And at the time, you needed, there was no internet then, no mobile phones or anything, and you needed a handwritten letter of introduction to go and study with Saito Sensei in Iwama in Japan. And I thought about it. And this was actually before I'd gone to Canada, and I spoke to my mum and my dad and my grandma and said, what should I do? And because I knew pretty much that if I went there, then I wouldn't go to university or mm-hmm. it would be off, And so my mum and my nan said, go to university and get, because I would have been the first in the family really to do that, get your degree and then you can do all this other stuff afterwards. And my dad kind of said, do what you feels right, do what you want to do. And so the best advice I got was from a guy I was training in Aikido with. And he said, look, you've got time, take the time to make the decision. Don't make a quick one. If you've got time, take it. And so I went and we did the trip to Canada, and nearly everyone I spoke to said, go to Japan, because if you go to university, you'll never go, you'll miss that chance, that opportunity. So my mind was made up, and I went on a one-way ticket with enough money. I saved up a one-way ticket with enough money for a month at the dojo. And I met Miles out there and Patrick. And it was a life-changing experience, really, both the experience of getting out there and, getting away from home at 19 and immersing myself in that environment. Because it was what I'd always dreamed of, watching... Mm-hmm. David Carradine in Kung Fu, it was like that, it was like a temple, and you raked the gravel every morning and cleaned the shrine and worked on the farm, and kind of training was all day. It wasn't just the 2 hours or 3 hours you did on the mat, it was all day, every day training, like a proper apprenticeship. So I did that for, I was out there for a total of 2 years, a year and a half first time, and then I came home. And I didn't go back to university, and I started to teach Aikido. Found it really difficult, if I'm honest. I kind of, training and living in Japan and studying Aikido was very different to teaching it back in the UK. And there was kind of an expectation, both in myself and from others, that I would be able to make a living out of it. And of course, anyone that's tried teaching martial arts for a living realizes it is not an easy way,
no. Really not,
especially with no real franchise machine behind you. It was just me on my own, and I had no business skill, I had very little interpersonal skills, and I kind of had a lot to learn about how to relate to people and how to transfer the skill from Japan to teaching in an environment where people come for fun, of course. And why not? So I did that for about 2 years and struggled through and had other jobs, and then I thought, I need to do something here. So I went back to Japan for 6 months to figure out what I was going to do. Was I going to live in Japan full time and just kind of move out there because I loved the lifestyle? Was I going to really make a go of it and come back and try and teach or do something completely, or go back to university or something completely different? And this is how I came to the army. And so I'd been there for 4 months, 5 months and about 2 weeks. And I had about 2 weeks left before I was to come back. And I was still no clearer, really, at least unconsciously, of what I was going to do. And then, as so often happens, something happened. And a guy turned up called Warwick Stacey from Australia, an Aikido student, and he trained in Sydney. And it was my job at the time to kind of, because I spoke Japanese too, I welcomed people in, took them to meet sensei and present the gift, and then come back and show them how everything worked in the dojo, you know. And as we were walking back down the pathway, I said to him, "See, you got a bit of a British accent." And he said, "Yeah." He said, "I lived in Britain for 8 years." I said, "Oh, whereabouts?" He said, "Aldershot." And I've got no military background in family. And I said, "But I'd seen a program that was called The Paras, and it was like an eight-part series about the Paras that had been on TV." So I knew that, and I said, "Oh, the home of the Paras." And he looked at me and he said, "Yeah, that's right, the home of the British Army." And so a couple of nights later, we were sat outside having a drink. We got on very well right from the start, really, and having a chat. And I said, "So you were in the Paras, were you?" And he said, "Yeah." He said, "I spent 5 years in the Paras and 3 years in the SAS.
Oh, wow.
As soon as he said it, I thought, that's what I'm going to do. It was the oddest feeling, because it was like, it was just waiting for me to hear those words. And then I knew what to do, you know, and I thought so deeply and hard about so many other things and gone down, talked to so many people and so many avenues over that past, well, lifetime really, but certainly 3 years when I was trying to figure out where my life was going. But he just said a couple of words and I knew, it was like, that's what I'm going to do in my body, you know. And so he spent the next 2 weeks giving me information about who to call and where to go, and the selection process for it. And he told me to join as an officer, not a soldier. I didn't know the difference. I didn't, you know, you joined and then they selected where they think you should go, you know. But he said, you know, you'll have better prospects and a slightly better life if you do that, rightly or wrongly. So I did, and the selection process is quite onerous. You do a morning interview, and then a 2-day interview, and then a 3-day interview, and then the year at Sandhurst. So it's kind of, and you can fail at any stage along that way, you know, at any moment. So, but I commissioned from Sandhurst as a second lieutenant in 1998, I think, and then. Then I did the selection, the further selection, then to join the parachute regiment. It's one of the.
So did your Aikido background help you during the army years?
Yeah, hugely. I think the physical challenge it helped me with. Mm-hmm. In some ways, not. In it helped me in terms of because when I came back from, I went to Japan at 10 and a half stone as a 19 year old boy. And I came back about 14 stone, kind of much more solidly built, you know, because as you know, there's a power in it and a grounding and a solidity, and I almost had to learn how to run again, you know. And I kind of, so, you know, I hadn't run for years when I started. So, you know, getting fit for it was difficult. But what really helped was the experience of going through, it's almost like a basic training camp, the Iwamado. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, you're up early, it's very disciplined, you can do this, you can't do that, you have to do this in a set way. You know, if the bell rings, you've got to react immediately and kind of, you know, run whatever you're doing at the moment, drop it. So the ability to react, to respond. But more so than that, the understanding of the game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'd gone in at the start and gone through all of the kind of breaking down, if you like. And then I can remember a time in Japan when some new people arrived, and there'd always be the thing in Japan of stepping into the wrong level with your shoes on, you know, and not taking them off, or putting your bags on the floor and then picking up, putting them on the table, you know, right? And sensei would shout at these guys. And then, you know, at first it's terrifying because he's a scary man anyway, and he's the sensei. And you know what he can do, and you want to try and impress him, and you've just arrived at this place, you know. And so when you get those moments, it's scary. And then I'd been there like a year and a half, and I can remember, and I was doing the translating then, so when he shouted at people, I was telling them what he was actually saying. and I thought to myself, he can't really be angry with these guys, you know, he's seen it so many times. And he looked at me and kind of smiled out of the corner of his mouth after he'd kind of, you know, bawled one of these guys out. And I kind of understood then, you know, that it was a game, and it was a means, and it wasn't personal. And then I took that into the army. So when everyone else was adjusting to that and trying to understand why they're being shocked to that and taking it personally and taking it into them, I realized I understood the game. So that stress that normally comes with joining the army, I was able to see through. Of course, it was hard. You know, it was demanding, but I kind of understood the game of it.
So tell me, I've seen in your bio that your first contact with Sistema was like a week seminar with Vasiliev, Talanov, and Kumarov. So there, I'm not sure about Talanov, but all of them are with military backgrounds. How was the difference with the Russian approach to the, because I guess that the camp was based like some kind of semi-military program or something. So what's the difference between your experience in the British Army and what they did?
Yeah, it was, it wasn't set up to be like a military camp with them. It was that, you know, they're to study Sistema. Mm-hmm. It was much more calm and relaxed. You know, their whole demeanor was much more calm and relaxed. Mm-hmm. And you know, still an expectation that you'd be serious in your studying, in your training. And, you know, I remember a couple of people were late sometime and, you know, Vladimir was starting the session. And he said, come on, guys, you know, you need to be on time. And so there was kind of a, you know, it wasn't completely lax. There was still a discipline and expectation, but not like a basic camp, basic training thing. So yeah. And I first came across them while I was in the army. And it was an email by Stanley Pranin that I read and that
when they were doing the Aikido, what was the name of the seminars when they invited Vasiliev and Ryabko, I think, yes.
Yeah, it was his experience of meeting them before that. A couple of things stood out for me from that. The day there was this thing that was very like Aikido, but very different too, and that incorporated the military. And you know, training outdoors, and and a lot of the freedom that I was looking for in martial art, and so it intrigued me, and I went along to see Mikhail, and there was Mikhail and Vladimir at this seminar, and Martin Wheeler and Val Ryaznov, and it was in the UK.
Oh, this is great.
A great artist there, and so that was quite an introduction. And then, a number of years later, I went about nearly 10 years later. I went to see Vladimir in Canada, and kind of that was the huge switch, really. I'd only gone a very full time. And
one thing that I found that is not taught enough or in many schools at all in Aikido is breathing. And yours, my background is that I played for 10 years a clarinet, so I learned to breathe properly from the belly, from that. But I would see a lot of like a high level Aikido student that would go after the randori, they would be breathing through the mouth and no control at all. And then when I met Sistema, there is such a beautiful structure of breathing exercises and really something that structurally and gradually leads you to more control of the breathing. Can you tell a little bit more about that? And I guess the exercises today is gonna be.
Yeah. I was gonna say, that's a great segue into the lesson for today, really, what I was gonna teach today. Mm. I didn't get it at first, like everyone nearly. I thought, well, I breathe okay, how much can there be in breathing? And now it's becoming a much more, this last decade probably, breathing has become much more in the zeitgeist, the awareness of everybody and the importance of it, not just to physical performance, but your health and your mental health and well-being too. And especially now, we've got this virus that affects your breathing and a better control of your breathing is a better control of your life, your performance, your health, everything. So And the more I study it, the more I realize there is to study, but also there's some really quick wins, So what I'll do maybe is go into the session now. Mm-hmm. And the idea of the session today is about breath, body, and fear. So And when I say fear, what I'm also talking about is anxiety, stress. You know, they're all really the same root. And what I wanted to look at and go through with you today. And so please, anyone that's on the call, feel free to put any questions in the chat, you know, and Ranko will pass them on to me, and we'll do as many as we can. Because I don't want this to be a presentation. I want it to be something you can get some things to take away. So if you've got some things you want to ask, please feel free. All the way through, but I'll also give a bit of time at the end. As we do some slightly physical things that, you know, it's not going to be much. It's largely going to be working with the breath, but we'll test the breath a bit with some physical things. Then just do what your body allows. You know, so you can do a bit sitting if you like, we may do some movement, but do what your body allows and stay safe. You know your body's best. So when we talk about fear, the other side of the coin is breath. You know, the absence of breath, so even for a short time, will start to bring anxiety and fear into the body. And you're talking minutes, really, before there's death. So, you know, that process happens really quickly. And equally, the antidote to fear, or one of the antidotes to fear, a very good one, is breath, and understanding how the breath can dissolve and melt away the fear as it's coming into the body. And so what we're going to look at today is how to use your breath and the sensitivity in your body to better understand and manage and have a different relationship with stress and fear as it's coming into your body. So, and this is obviously useful for martial artists. This is the Martial Arts Channel. So it's good whether you're doing martial arts for self-defense. Probably the biggest barrier you've got to get over is the ability to act and use the skills and training, or, you know, have awareness of a situation building when you're in it, even before you get to the physical skills. If you're doing martial arts for sports or competition, then generally the guy that can be calmer and more relaxed and play out his game plan is going to have the better opportunity, you know, everything else kind of balanced. Also this is equally applicable for your health. You know, the better you can manage and remove fear, stress, anxiety from your body, the healthier you're going to be. And that's kind of an obvious thing. So it kind of spans the bridge between the martial and the healing arts, I think, this action. And from all the people I get coming into the academy and the comments you get and the feedback you get, 9 out of 10 of them are how the breath work and the things we learn in system,
exactly, yeah,
help them to live a healthy life rather than got them out of a tight spot, you know. So what we'll do is we'll begin just by you bringing awareness and understanding to the breath. So you can do this either sitting down or standing, but wherever you, so if you're sitting down, what I'd like you to do is try and feel the bones of your bum. So make sure you're sat on your sitting bones. You can feel the soles of the feet too, if you like, but try and feel as though you're sat comfy, sat in a way that you can, you know, quite easily look over your shoulders. You can look up, look down, you can turn, twist, and stand in one smooth movement. So a good sitting posture is one, good posture in general is one where your next movement should be quite fluid and easy. So if you're sat, it shouldn't take adjustment. You should be able to smoothly move to a stand from the sitting position. And then if you're standing, you try and check that what feels normal for you. So if you stood, you should be stood in a way that you're not tense anywhere. So like if you stood too wide, you'll feel this tension. If you stood too narrow, you'll feel there's a little bit of tension, maybe an imbalance. So it's an obvious thing, but it's good to notice the obvious things sometimes. Your natural posture stance should be one where, you know, you can turn, you can look, you've got good observation from it. Your legs aren't stiff, you know, your knees are slightly relaxed. Your chest isn't sunken in a way that will restrict your ability to look. Your chest is slightly up and out, not shoulders pulled back like a military posture, but slightly up and out, shoulders relaxed. And in a way that you can turn and look smoothly, you can step off very smoothly without any real adjustments. So it's good to check that first, that your basic normal stance is a relaxed one. And then start to bring your attention to your breathing. So firstly, we look at the pathway. So breathing in through the nose and out through the mouth. Out through the nose is fine too, but generally when we start looking at more physical things like a martial art or like, you know, heavy lifting or something like that, taking strikes, you generally want to exhale through the mouth because it allows you to get the pressure out more effectively. So start to bring your attention to your breathing and see if you can breathe without tension, nice and smoothly. And for a lot of people in the beginning, that's tricky, you know, because maybe their chest is crumpled, their shoulders are tense, their neck is tense. And as they start to breathe, that tension blocks a smooth, easy breath. So just check in yourself whether your breath is smooth and easy. If it's not, gently move the area where you feel any blockage. And just a little bit, try and relax through breathing. And then what we're going to look at before we go into the fear side of it is, we've got a bit of time. We'll look at some key levels of breath. So to do with awareness and preparing yourself for certain situations. So first level is quite a high level. So what I want you to imagine is that you don't breathe any lower than kind of your clavicle area. So it's kind of, you breathe into the nose and you feel the breath go down to here and then back out. So it's quite a short breath. And that feeling in the body, like for me, I always imagine if I was a soldier and kind of, you know, walking through a wood or walking down a street or through a house that you got to clear, or even anyone else walking down an alleyway at night and you know, you're a bit uneasy. This is kind of a high awareness breath. You know, everything's up near your ears, near your nose, near your brain, your eyes. You're not deeply relaxed at this stage. You're kind of on the search, on the lookout for where danger might be. So if you try that breath, that short light breath, then, you know, you may find that, you know, kind of your senses generally around this area, eyes, ears, nose, your brain are all a bit heightened, or your focus is here in this area. So then the next level is kind of solar plexus area, mid chest. And this is kind of a ready for action kind of breath. So it's midway between kind of deep breath, which is relaxing, and kind of high awareness breath. So this breath is, you've been breathing lightly, you see the danger, you hone in on it, and you ready yourself with a kind of a mid-range breath to run, to fight, to act, whatever. So kind of imagine now that you bring the breath down to the center of the chest. And what you're after is a feeling that you're midway between high alertness and deep relaxation. So you want kind of a powerful breath, like a power in the center of the chest, but not too relaxed and not too high in awareness. And this can be a bit more powerful. You know, if you can feel tension rising because of the situation, you can power yourself, you can remove any tension and stress, but you don't relax yourself too much. So that's the kind of the second breath, like a mid-range. The third breath then is kind of deep to the belly. So the danger's passed and you want to deeply relax your system and let go of any of the stress that you accumulated because of that situation. You know, of course, I'm talking about a more emergency situation here, like for a soldier or, you know, in a confrontation in a dark alley, but it's equally applicable to any stressful situation. Like, you know, you're sitting at your desk and you think the day's finished and suddenly this huge pile of work comes in the form of an email, or, you know, you have an argument, or, you know, you know you've got a difficult situation to deal with. You know, the stress comes in the same way for all of those. So this time, inhale and see if you can feel the air go all the way down to the belly. And then release from the belly and inhale. And this is more a breath when you want to clear out, when you know the danger's passed, when you can relax. If you have trouble sleeping, you know, this is a good breath to go to So it's more of a kind of a depth in the breath. And then the final one you can look at then is a light breath, where you feel as though the breath permeates the whole body, just kind of runs through the whole body, very light, very easy. So it's not focused in a particular area. It's just kind of universal, almost global through your whole body. And this breath is kind of barely audible, and you know, you barely kind of feel it really. It's, you know, and the sort of breath that doesn't interrupt your movement. So I can be breathing in, out. You know, I can move about on the floor, and that, you know, the breath is just flowing through the body. You know, whatever activity I'm doing, even if I'm moving, you know, quite fast, quite vigorous, you know, my breath is just continuing smoothly and evenly through the whole of the movement. And that's a light breath. And that can be used for other circumstances. Okay, so that's the idea on the breaths. And what we're going to do now is look at, and you can come back to sit if you like, or you can stay standing. What we're going to look at now is developing the sensitivity to stress or fear or anxiety as it comes in the body. And we're going to do some very light breath holds for that. So what we're going to do is, firstly, just if you've done a bit of movement, just kind of breathe a little bit and bring yourself down so that there's no pressure on your breath. So what I want you to do is get to your baseline state. So inhale, exhale, almost like, you know, when you have your heart rate taken and they get you to lie down on a bed or to sit down and just relax a little bit so that you take your heart rate at your baseline. So you want to try and bring yourself to that level so that you know kind of what your baseline is. Are there any questions, Ranko, that have come in that you...
Yes, I didn't want to interrupt the exercise. So first question is the difference between fear and let me see a little bit up there, fear and excitement, but that it's not so much connected with breath, but the other one is breathing to deal with panic. So would you recommend to use burst breathing or slow down breathing if there is like a panic approach?
Yeah, so yeah, dealing with fear and panic, we're going to come onto that in the session, but both is the answer. So a little bit of burst breathing, mm-hmm. and deep, slow breathing. And I'll kind of dispel a bit of a myth that some early people into Sistema have, that, you know, burst breathing is a set, almost metronomic mechanical thing. And it's not, you know, it's meant to be inquisitive, your burst breathing. Mm-hmm. Talk about that when we get to that part of this. The one on fear and excitement, good question, really. And they're probably on the scale, you know, on because it you know, because a little bit of fear is exhilarating, too much is calcifying, you know, it kind of it hampers and hinders your action, your movement, your health. So it's kind of, and being able to manage that sliding scale yourself is what you want. You want to be able to realize when you're tipping into an unhelpful state of exhilaration, excitement, fear. Of course, sometimes fear can go straight to all out panic and blind fear. Or sometimes it kind of bit like on a fairground ride. And it's very personal too, of course, you know, for some people a fairground ride is total terror. For some it's exhilarating. For some it hardly touches the sides. So it's kind of and the effects in the body are quite similar. And often it's down to how you see it. And I'm onto that as well.
One more technical question is could you give us more cues for the tummy breath? And the person says, I cannot get there. And also light breath, how do you do it?
Okay, so the tummy breath, a really good exercise to do is to work through systematically down through your body. So this is a great check for even if you're a really good breather, and or if you're a complete novice getting there. So Firstly, you inhale through the nose and see if you can just fill up your nose and then breathe back out again. So don't go any further than the top of your nose with your breath. And a couple of things you'll notice, you know, A, whether you can actually breathe in through the nose. Some people have that problem when they first start to focus on breathing and realize that they actually spend most of their time breathing in through their mouth. So you figure out whether you can. And also you realize that that can be enough. If you're not doing anything too physical, just a very small breath can be enough. You don't, you know, you need far less breath for normal everyday activities than people think. So that then I'm going to go very quickly through this because there's other stuff I want to get onto, but you'll give people the understanding of the exercise. Then you go a step further. So you inhale through the nose and imagine that you cover your brain with your breath and then back out. And you can come out through the nose or the mouth, it's up to you. So you follow that pathway and almost try and feel the pathway, the coolness of the breath. You can image it, you can do it by a feeling in your body or a picture in your mind. And so then try and come through the nose, cover the brain, and come all the way down to the base of the neck, and then back out. And of course, as you go, one of the key things for the breath is to oxygenate and energize, of course, but it's to relax too. So if you feel any tension on this path, try and relax it out. So you get to the neck, then you try and follow that pathway all the way to the solar plexus. And if you find, okay, that's the blockage, that's the bit I can't get past, then move that area a little bit. So try and see if there's some physical tension that's blocking and try and move it, wobble it out. Then try again. So you inhale, and as soon as you touch the tension, if there's any tension there, first thing is exhale and see if you can relax that tension that you just touched with your inhale, with your exhale. If that doesn't work, you can kind of move a little bit. Or another method is to bring more tension to that area yourself, then relax it. So if an area is tense, you tense it even more and then relax it, and that sometimes helps. Or burst breathing, which is kind of like scrubbing, you know, imagine it like scrubbing the tension. So there are a couple of methods to, and then, so you go to there, then go to the belly button, then go to the groin area. You can be as kind of segmented as you like, really. Then you can think about going to the knees, ankles, and then the toes. And that, you know, the Chinese had a lovely saying where you should be able to breathe from your head to your heels. So from the tip of your nostrils, you should be able to follow the breath all the way down to the toes. And that shows that you're quite relaxed then. So if you're having trouble getting down, it's tension probably. Or you're breathing in too much too soon. You're kind of going rather than. So try and, you know, one of the exercises we do in Sistema is a breath ladder, which teaches you breath control. So you breathe in one step, breathe out one step, breathe in two steps, breathe out two steps, breathe in over three steps, out over three steps. And you kind of start to extend that. And that links your breath to your body and your physical actions. For most people, those two things are out of sync. You know, how you breathe and how you move, those two things aren't synced. So a breath ladder brings the two into sync very well. I kind of always warm a class up with a breath ladder, either walking or running or whatever. And then, but it also teaches you breath control to be able to lengthen out your breath over like 10, 15 steps and then, you know, contract your breath. Okay. So the exercise we were doing, let me get back to that. So hopefully everyone's kind of relaxed now and kind of your baseline. So the first thing I want you to do is check your breathing rate. You know, what urgency there is in your breath, how fast your breathing rate is, your heart rate, not necessarily kind of taking your pulse, just see if you can, even the absence of being able to feel your heart rate tells you something. Your blood pressure and the sense of pressure in the body and how your muscles feel. Do they feel tense? Do they feel tired, fatigued, lactic, or do they feel okay? So you just, that's your base state, really. That's kind of normal, or what should be your at rest kind of state. All right. So then what I want you to do is we're going to do an exercise to develop sensitivity to stress coming into the body. So you're going to inhale. Don't do it yet. Just kind of listen. You're going to inhale. Then I'm going to exhale. Just a normal out breath. Don't push the air out. Just relax and let the air come out. Then you're going to hold your breath and you're going to watch. And what I want you to watch for is the very first sign of any discomfort in the body. And then go back to breathing again. And do that exercise maybe once or twice. So if everyone tries that, so you breathe in, normal exhale, and then hold. And just watch and check. And you want to try and catch it at the earliest opportunity. This isn't a challenge to think, yeah, it's not bothering me yet. You know, I can hold my breath for 3 minutes, or it's not any kind of challenge like that. The challenge is the other end. How early can you feel the first couple of grains of stress or tension coming into your body? How quickly can you detect it? When you detect it, recover, restore. And then the next time, maybe notice where it is, where you feel it. Do you feel it in your throat? Do you feel it in your chest, in your back maybe? Is it a thought in your mind? Just kind of notice it as soon as you feel it. And this is kind of like if there's an avalanche, I want to catch it as early as possible. If I can catch the first couple of rocks, you know, first couple of pebbles and divert them, that's great. That's avalanche stopped. I don't want to wait till it's 20, 30 meters down the slope and it's a big challenge. So stress coming into the bodies like that, it kind of starts slow and then builds quite quick. So the earlier you can detect it, the better. So then, and this is kind of the progression we do in Sistema. We look at a skill and we isolate it. So we've been static, either standing or sitting. So there's no muddying of the water, no complication really. It's been quite straightforward to identify the skill and think, okay, yeah, I can feel that. I can see that. Good. Then you take it into a bit of movement. So now you can try the same thing if you've got access at home. Just walk around a little bit. So you inhale, exhale, and hold. And see if while you're walking, you can have the same sensitivity to detect it. Because of course, you know, stress is probably going to happen in motion or when there's other things going on and you'll be distracted from it. So see if you can still notice while you're moving around, you know, walk forwards, walk backwards, see if you can still notice it. And try that once or twice. We're really going quite fast through this, guys. It's kind of giving you ideas. Normally you'd have more time to cue in. But at least you'll know the process, you know, of how to do it. And then, you know, the next level up, you can do it with a, you know, a bit more vigorous movement like running or doing push-ups or doing squats, or even, you know, some ground movement. So, you know, I can get down on the ground, inhale, exhale, and start to move. And even though I'm moving, my focus is internal. It's on any sign of stress coming into the body during this breath hold. And there I felt it, so. And you can recover on the move. So it's good not to have to stop to recover. If you can recover while you're doing the action, then that's even better. So that's the first thing, to develop the sensitivity at the earliest possible stage that, aha, okay, this stress coming into me here and I can feel it. And know that if you're continuing to do the stressful activity, that's going to build and it on a breath hold, it'll build quite quick. So that, you know, the earlier you can catch it, the better. So that's stage one. So The next thing we're going to do is quite an interesting exercise, and it's quite a big part of the philosophy of how to deal with stress. So what I'm going to try and get you to do is two types of breath hold. And you'll notice, although we're doing breath hold work, we're not starting right at the extreme end of trying to beat your last time every single time, you know, challenging yourself right at your sharp end. We're developing a sensitivity right at the easy, pleasant, kind of pleasurable end. You know, for a little bit, a breath hold is really pleasant and deeply relaxing, you know, and we're working at that end first. So what I want you to do this time, though, is notice the difference between these two things. So what I'd like you to try and do is inhale, exhale. And the reason that we're doing the breath hold on an exhale is because, don't do it yet, that you're more, your sensitivity is higher after you've exhaled. If you try it, inhale. And if you try and detect on a full hold, there's more going on inside. There's a pressure inside the body that kind of occludes a little bit the sensitivity. But if you let that pressure out, you can feel more inside. For me anyway. But, you know, like all the things I say, try them. Don't accept my my thoughts. You know, try it for yourself. See if it works. So that's why we're doing it on the soft exhale. They call it a partial exhale or a soft exhale. So you're going to inhale. So everyone try it now. You inhale, exhale, and hold your breath. And you hold your breath for as long as you want to. You decide when you want to recover. So I'll give you a minute or so. And still watch inside. So watch for the first sign of discomfort. And maybe don't recover at the first sign of discomfort. Try and just notice that and think, okay, that's where it is. What's going to happen next? And watch as it builds. But you choose. Don't, you know, kill yourself. You choose when you want to recover. And when you recover, you use focused breathing to restore yourself. And when I talk about focused breathing to restore, I mean that. So like, you'll all recover anyway. You know, if I just sit and talk for a bit, you'll have recovered by the time I finish talking. But if you take a conscious control of that, you get more thorough in your restoring. So you don't miss any bits of stress that might be sitting in joints or in your psyche. You know, you really thoroughly clean the stress out when you focus on it. And also you'll get it quicker, which in certain situations, you know, then seconds count on who can recover the fastest. So you'll be more thorough and you'll be faster if you take a conscious, you direct your recovery, don't just let it happen. So get really skillful at that process.
One directly connected question with this, does this technique work for pain control?
Yes. Yeah, so I'm aiming to get to that. I didn't realize the time. Okay, yes it can. So burst breathing can work for pain control. And also, so with pain control, so say for example, I don't want to go in too much to this because I won't finish off the exercise. Whoever had that question, email me separately and I'll get you the answer, okay? If go onto the website, which is going to be in here, email me and I'll very happily answer that question. Okay, but it's basically the same idea, same process. It's conscious attention to the area. Manage it with your breathing. So don't allow it to tighten you up, to lock you up. Loosen off. Don't allow the injury to start to spread through the body and lock up other areas. You know, you, especially for a martial artist, you know, you want an injury is like a hold in some ways. You know, like in Aikido, someone grabs you and restricts your movement. An injury is like that. It grabs hold of you and restricts your movement. And as a martial artist, you want to try and make sure that doesn't happen. But for healing too, you want to make sure. So you imagine breathing down to the area, keeping the area loose, keeping the blood flowing through it, your energy, your attention going to it. And you almost kind of, with the inhale, you pull the pain away and kind of expel it from the body with the exhale. in a nutshell, it's a bit more than that. But okay, so so that was the first one you chose when you breathed. This time, inhale, exhale, hold your breath, and don't recover until I say so. So already it probably feels a little bit different because you're not in control of it anymore. Of course, don't pass out. You know, if you need to breathe, breathe, but see if you can hold it a little bit. Okay, and recover. So hopefully, you know, you saw that those two things are different. When you feel that you're in control of the stress you decided when you were breathing, it's a very different feeling to when someone else is directing the stress. And this is maybe one of the biggest things about learning to manage stress, anxiety, fear, when you take ownership of it. So it's like when we do breath holds, and we're not gonna be able to cover everything today, but when you do breath holds, what you do is you deliberately introduce stress to your body in a manageable way, and you remove it out. And that way it's a bit like an inoculation. You know, you're giving yourself a little bit of stress, understanding it better, getting your body used to it, and then through having a little dose of it, you get better at handling the big doses. So it's a little bit like that. But equally importantly, you get an understanding of it, an understanding that you can control and restore yourself from stress. So when it's coming in, you know, you're in a situation that's stressful, you know, the most helpful thing you can do is to understand it's not I can't blame the situation, I can't blame the people, I can't blame the government, I can't blame the world. You know, what I know is that I'm the gatekeeper of this, and I can take control and manage the effect it's having inside my body or on my psyche. And when you have that attitude to it, even the system that you use to deal with stress changes. Your psychophysiological system is more one of challenge, acceptance, adventure. They're very positive emotions that deal with stress, as opposed to when you feel the stress is being done to you. You know, and of course this is simplistic, but also it's and a bit brutal, but also it's very true. If you feel that stress is being done to you, then the system that you're using is your fight flight system, and that's about defensiveness, about contraction, about trying to escape all the time. You know, so the whole system that you use, you can change when you take however the stress is coming into your body, you take responsibility for it, for managing it and removing it and keeping yourself healthy. So what we're going to do now is, how are we doing?
Yeah, we are at the end of it. So it's 55, unfortunately.
I'll just say what we would have done then is go on to longer breath holds, the tools to manage, to notice the stress coming in and manage it as it's coming in. So just some basic physical tools like moving your body, having a positive mindset, relaxing down through, using some distraction techniques. And that way you hit all three aspects. You hit being able to better detect stress at an earlier stage, manage it when it's coming in, because sometimes you can't escape a stressful situation, you've got to stay in it. But then equally, understanding how to come back to your baseline again, to come back home, if you like. And the more regularly you take that journey, like any journey, you know, the more regularly you come home from different places, the easier it is to get there.
Yeah, thank you for that. I'm really sorry that we didn't get to really physically to the end of the exercise. And as Matt said, any questions that didn't get answered, please just email him. You will find the mail on his website. That is just, it's available here in the chat. And just before we end, just a few announcements. So the next session in an hour is bioexercise with Catherine Lemieux. I hope I pronounced the name correctly. And in the meantime, you can join the coffee breaks. You will find the link in the portal so you can communicate about the sessions with other attendees. Please join the Facebook group where you can also discuss the sessions, the presenters, and so. Channel sponsor is Rafe Kelly. Now this is the video of our sponsor video.
Welcome to the Martial and Healing Arts channel. I'm Rafe Kelly, founder of Evolve Move Play. I'm extremely excited to be sponsoring this channel. Martial and healing arts have been key aspects of embodiment and self-cultivation for thousands of years. I have some of my best friends in the industry, Rory Miller, Matt Thornton, Edward Hines, presenting here, and I'm really excited to share what they have to say with you guys. You're gonna love it. So Evolve Move Play is an ecology of practices of movement, mindfulness, nature connection, and community. And within the movement, we have a big emphasis on moving in nature and being able to do parkour. We also like to lift weights and throw things around, but there's a huge aspect of martial arts, and I've been training martial arts since I was 6 years old. So it's really exciting to be able to sponsor this channel in particular. If you're interested in my work, check out my talks on the Main Stage and the Movement Anatomy channel. If you can't get to either of those live, you can check us out at Rafe Kelly on Instagram, get all your awesome embodiment giveaways. And for now, just enjoy this amazing channel. It's gonna be an awesome show. Hey guys.
Okay, great. And also, let's see. Yes, presenter website is also in the chat. And of course, if you're a little bit like me, you're frustrated because you cannot catch all the lectures or the sessions, because even they're free for the 48 hours, but there are so many coming, so many great lectures. So you are more than welcome to purchase our recordings library. And with that, you will not only get the library of all the session recordings, you will also get the audio files, so you can take your time and enjoy them on the go. You'll get the session cheat sheet notes, so you can just read through them. And also something that makes this almost like a university, you will get learning lists for structured university-like approach to the materials. Also worth mentioning is that during the conference, you do have a 50% off the price for the whole, for all materials. So just hit the upgrade button. It will be a great gift to yourself and also to others, to people around me and around you, and to all of those that can watch it for free because of you that purchased. So before we finish, Matt, can you do like your top tip for being more embodied?
Yeah, for me, it fits in with what we've just done. Try and notice just how much you hold your breath in everyday life. So, you know, when you stop and think, maybe even if you stand up from a chair or get into your car, you approaching a situation that's going to be difficult to deal with, just notice in everyday life how much you hold your breath, and know that if you exhale then, and feel that relaxation down through your body, you're doing something so positive for your everyday health. And the more you do that in everyday life, the more you're just shedding away the innate levels of stress and tension in your body.